Não, thanks. Okay. It's good to be back together, at least in this way. It was just my parents. We'll be marketing with what is becoming a standard part of our shir. A very big mazel tov to the German mishpacha. No news there, right? This is basically how the Thursday night drasha goes. Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. That's the other branch. The other branch of the German mishpacha. And we add another clause, mazel tov to the Yudin mishpacha. The Chashem Yudin mishpacha. We have a lot to say, a lot to feel, a lot to express. But let's do it step by step. The Hashgacha here was rather amazing because I didn't have to spend any time trying to figure out what should be said. It was basically everything that had to be said in today's drasha was basically automatic. Basically automatic. So there's really not much of a chokhmah to it. We'll see soon the amazing hashgacha and the way things came together right now. Let's approach our parsha. I want to start by saying, we mentioned this last week in the shir. I'm going to repeat it now, but we're going in a different direction. We mentioned last week how in the Sefer Kuzari, the non-Jewish king was busy debating the Jewish Chacham about Judaism, can't understand the Jewish concept of Kedusha. Kedusha means living a life, in his understanding, in his world, Kedusha means living a life of isolation, of asceticism, of nothing to do with anything worldly. Marriage, family certainly are contradictions to the concept of Kedusha. And we discussed last week how that's not so. And no, we're not repeating the drasha. We are going in a different direction here. We are put in the material world and told to operate in the material world with all kinds of very material matters, all kinds of very material pursuits. Have a family, have a wife, have a husband, have children, do business, eat, drink. That is where you find your greatness. But if we just leave it at that, it's very geschmack, makes things easy. And you know what? Many people like to leave it at that. The Torah wants us to eat. The Torah wants us to drink. The Torah wants us to live a material life. And that's it. That's it. It begins and ends with that. But here's really where the challenge is. The challenge is that it's not true at all. The Torah wants you to live a very spiritual life. The Torah wants you to be living in these, so to speak, mundane things, but to be approaching them and living them in a spiritual reality, to having them in the right place in the spiritual picture. And this is the very complex business of Yiddishkeit. Living in the world of the material, but yet operating in a spiritual place while you're doing all that. While you're doing all that. This is a theme. This is a concept that we discuss often, and this we might say is the essence of life as a Jew. And one of my rabbis, Michael Yaakovson, often explained that this is the depth of the concept of kavod. Kavod, when you show reverence for something, what it means is, and this is so essential to Yiddishkeit, you see something in front of you, just looks like something physical, but you are relating to the spiritual reality behind it. The classic example being, you know what? Let's give the example we're going to be getting to later on. A shul, right? It's a building. It's a building. And you walk in there with reverence. Even though, what is it? It's wood. It's stone. But you know what? We make that wood and stone beautiful. We make that wood and stone beautiful. Why? Because we want it to be flat. Because it's something physical here. You want to be linked to the inner depth of it. You want to be
you know what? That has a lot to do with also the deal of Kadabris. Just has to Kadabris. The paramount value of Chazal, the requirements to show reference for coming in. That's one element of it. It's appreciating the immensity of the Kedusha of a Jew is leading to it. Don't look like intelligent beasts. I want you to have the appearance of a Tzadikim as much as possible. And yes, you have to be interacting with people that you are dealing with something of immense chemistry. When you would be at your most physical, right? That's when all kinds of things are put into play that check you here and check you there. You can't just out of the Suda. Just again, this halacha is about the size of the bikes you're supposed to take, not to take too many bikes. And the bathroom. You can't just expose yourself, however, think about how you do it, or even about how you're supposed to wipe yourself. What's the idea here? The idea here is you have to keep reminded that, on the contrary, these things are misleading in terms of who you really are. You are not something animalistic. I expect you to be able to be in a physical world dealing with all kinds of material things and to remain a spiritual person with a spiritual perspective, a spiritual approach, a spiritual being in a spiritual place when you're busy with these physical things. Big discussion. We've discussed many times. Now back to this week's parsha. This is tough for a human being. This is tough for a human being. And therefore, it makes it easier for us in a few different ways. And one of those very big ways is Hashem provides us with experiences that keep us connected to the real thing and to the real perspective. And how does He do that? He gives us a Beis HaMikdash. He gives us Kaihanim. And this, among other things, provide us with a zone, with people, with a reality that's much more reflecting the real thing. Look at Reb Moshe. Yeah, Reb Moshe Ber. A reality that's much more reflecting the real thing. You have a Kohen with very unique halachas. Say a Kohen Gadol. When I call Reb Moshe Ber that, he stops me. But you have a Kohen Gadol. A Kohen Gadol, this is just one example. And this you'll see in many of the different dinim of the kahuna. A Kohen Gadol is not allowed to become tamei to a relative who died. What's the idea here? It's a harsh idea. It's a tough idea. But it's something that we're all supposed to be living in theory. Now, this is a little tough. So if you are faint of heart, don't listen right now. But you know what? I'll tell a story to illustrate it. When one of the Rothschilds, so he was a very, very meticulous, observant Jew. This is in the time of Shem Shemuel Hirsch. And he had a brother or a cousin who was completely off, completely reformed, whatever it is. Now, his daughter was consorting with this cousin's son. And she expressed her desire to marry him. This would mean that she would be dropping everything. So I came to consult with Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch. She, of course, opposed the marriage. So he said to Rav Hirsch, my daughter, she won't relent. She wants to marry this cousin with everything that he stands for. Rav Hirsch said, absolutely not. You don't allow it. So then he said, she said that she'll kill herself. Rav Hirsch's response was, Alch dan. Okay, then also, meaning, yeah, let her kill herself. Now, I said this over once in a share, and someone said to me afterwards, woman, certainly you draw the line at family. With all of the religious ideals, certainly you draw the line at family. But you know what they were being told? They were being told, when you're dealing with a real Hashem, if religion is just this fluffy area in life, but it's not real life, so you draw the line at all kinds of places. You draw the line at family, you draw the line at money, you draw the line at good restaurants, you draw the line wherever you want. But if you're dealing with a real Hashem, and he's a real party of life, there are no lines. Everything is contained inside that. Family, and all the value of family, is within the framework of our relationship with Hashem. This is the lesson of the Akedah. And should there, chas v'shalom, be a conflict between the two, and there shouldn't, then we're told, you know what, Hashem comes first. Because really, Hashem is at the top of the pyramid. And on the contrary, however, what we're told is, usually it's the opposite. The rule is the opposite. You are in your family. That's where you're supposed to find Hashem. That's where your Avodas Hashem is. But don't let it turn into something separate. Don't let it turn into something that's supersedes Hashem. And the Kohen Gadol is where that theory is reality. He's told, you are now in the highest place of service of Hashem, that comes before family. A harsh thought to swallow. But this is where the Kohen Gadol expected to be. And for the purpose of what? For the purpose of what? For the purpose of being the example to the rest of Klal Yisrael of what they're doing on the theoretical level all the time. When they are busy with their family, they're doing it within the framework of their Avodas Hashem. Tough concept. We're not going to get into the details now. You'll find that this is the pshat in a number of the special theme of Kahuna. And this is also the pshat in the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash is a place that's meant to bring you into the zone you're supposed to be living all the time. And we have another din in this week's parasha. This is not from this week's parasha. This is from Parasha Shmini, according to the Chinuch. You're not allowed to step into the Beis HaMikdash with wildly grown hair. You're not allowed to step into the Beis HaMikdash drunk. What's the pshat in these halachas? The Chinuch bunches it all together, even though they're almost opposites. Grown hair is avelus. Drunk is the opposite. It's kalus roish, it's frivolity. The Chinuch brings these mitzvahs together and he says, in such beautiful ishainis, for me these lines are so fundamental. First of all, his whole concept of the Beis HaMikdash is, this is a place where you step into a zone that's permeated by Hashem. For the purpose of what? For the purpose of going back home, carrying that with you. But here you step into something that's bigger than yourself. You step in and you are overwhelmed by the grandeur. You're overwhelmed by the personalities there. Kuzari talks about this. When he walked into the Beis HaMikdash, there were the Kaihanim. He said that's where the Zirin frequented. The Nevi'im were there. The Sanhedrin was there. And you walked into standards of Avodas Hashem, watching the Kaihanim ba'Avodasam, busy, very, very energetically. The combination, the Kaihanim brought together an amazing combination of speed, meticulousness, precision. Precision and speed at the same time, and extreme dedication and intensity. This is what you were watching and you understood. This is what my life is supposed to look like. You couldn't do the Kabbalahs properly if you weren't very fast, very exact, and both at the same time. Now, we can't necessarily operate that way again. And our halachas that we live with on a regular basis allow us to be a little slower, perhaps a little more leeway, etc. But the Kaihanim are for us a live example of the theory, what we're supposed to be living with. Watch Reb Moshe Bird again. So, this is the theory that we're living with. We go there to get an example to watch what our lives is, what's behind what our lives are supposed to look like. And we want to see that precision, that meticulousness, etc., when we go back home, not in Shechting Karbanis, but in the way we talk to our family, in the way we put on tefillin, etc. We should then carry the example of the Avodah and the Beis HaMikdash. And now we say, and you know what else? The grandeur of the Beis HaMikdash. You walk in there and you're inspired to tears when you see the grandeur. You walk home and you feel like you're in that grand zone, because in your own home, you're in Hashem's zone too. That's part of what the Beis HaMikdash is supposed to do for you. And now let's get on to these halachas. You don't come in with wild hair. You don't come in drunk. The Chinuch says, because when you step into the zone of Hashem, first of all, you don't come in b'derech aveilus. You come in, listen how he says it. This is how you step into the Beis HaMikdash. Derech sasayin v'simcha v'tanuk. That's how you're supposed to step into the Beis HaMikdash. With sasayin, simcha, and tanuk. And then he goes on a bit further. And he said, that's already an interesting approach, because we would definitely connect with being told you step into the Beis HaMikdash. Be'ema u'be'yira b'reses u'be'zeya. You step in with fear, with trepidation, trembling, sweating, right? Sasayin v'simcha v'tanuk. With joy, with jubilation. That's how you step into the Beis HaMikdash. And then he goes a little further and he says, all the different halachas, he can't go in there drunk, etc. It's all the same point. And here's how he brings it all together. And listen to this combination. It's like he puts together a bunch of different feelings or a bunch of different sentiments that you would think are contradictory. They don't go together. You apply different ones at different places. He says, and this is really a sentence that I think should be on our fridges. When you step in before Hashem, you step in Derech, kavod, v'yira, ugdula, v'simcha. Look at these four phrases, how they come together. Kavod is reverence. Okay, that's fine. That works with anything. Fine. V'yira means with fear, with trepidation, with awe. Ugdula, you step in b'derech gedula. You have to be looking good when you step in, because you have to step in with self-importance. That's what gedula is. B'derech gedula. If we're talking about the gedula Beis HaMikdash, that's included in Kavod. Derech gedula means you step in a very prestigious way. You don't come in the way a prisoner comes into court, like the Gemara says, lavu shchoirim, right? Wearing black, kind of torn clothes to show your humility. You step in looking perfect. You step in looking immaculate. You step in, if you're a kohen, with those perfect clothing. Your own importance. You're supposed to appreciate what it means that you are operating in this zone. This is a zone that not everybody can step into. The simcha. And back to the simcha. With joy. Yira. And the kavod, the reverence. And the fear. And the trepidation. Go hand in hand with that sense of importance. An appreciation of who I am, and simcha, the thrill. The thrill. The thrill goes together with the fear. You know what? Thrill often is frightening. This is an example we've given a number of times, and this is mamish the point to understand. Imagine a very, 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 very talented singer who's stepping out for his first really big show. In one of the greatest theaters in the world. This is the first time he's always been part of a choir. Now he's been training, and they're expecting very great things out of him, and this is his debut. And he's stepping in and out in front of a crowd of 20,000 people. And he's about to step out. And if you look at him, you see that he's trembling. And that he has beads of sweat on his forehead. So you say to him, "Oi, I see this is really stressing you out. It's okay, we can call it off. Are you kidding? This is the high moment of my life. I'm terrified, but this is the high moment of my life. This is a fear that I would never forego. It's very rare that a person ever experiences such a thrilling fear. This is the thrilling fear, or the fearful thrill, that we feel in the Beis HaMikdash. So again, I just want to repeat that there. I want to repeat that sentence, that we step into the Beis HaMikdash. Derech, kavod, again, as we said, kavod means an appreciation of the inner value of what's going on here. Derech kavod ve'yira ugdula ve'simcha. It's a combination of reverence, fear, trepidation, self-importance, prestige, and joy. These all come together. That's the experience of being in the Beis HaMikdash. And then, once again, the whole purpose of it is, and this is why we're required to come there 3 times a year, the purpose of it is that you come back home and you carry it home with you, and you live your life with the experience of the Beis HaMikdash. And you live your life with the example of Kohanim, who are living the theory. We live in a different world than the Kohen lives. But they show us, they are live examples, real examples of the theory that we're supposed to be living all the time. Now, Rabbi Yisai, I want to say something. We might think that, okay, if we were going to step into the Beis HaMikdash, oh boy, we would be different people. But you know what? Even if you were to step into a Beis HaMikdash, it takes work to maintain it. The human being gets used to things, gets accustomed to things. With all of the examples and experience and inspiration that Hashem provides, He set it up such that at the end of the day, it's our job to maintain that reverence, to maintain that awe. There's talk now about going back to Shul. What exactly it'll be, we'll see. We were given an opportunity now to gain a new appreciation of the privilege of stepping into a Beis Hashem. There's all kinds of dinim of the covet of a shul, and we are enjoined to make it a beautiful place. It's halachas about that. It should be of a quality of the fancier homes in the area. It should be higher than these homes. Why? Because the shul for us is our mikdash ma'at. That's where we step out to gain an appreciation of what it means to be operating in Hashem's zone, of the grandeur of operating in Hashem's zone. And you're supposed to come back home with that reality. And again, we become so accustomed to it that we bring our mundane reality into the shul instead of vice versa, in so many different ways. And here Hashem is giving us an opportunity. You know what? Step out of shul for a little bit. Step out of shul for a little bit. Start to pine for going back to shul. And then let's try again. And here I'm coming to the point that I started with. The hashgacha here, it can't be lost on anybody who knows what's going on. This is the week of the German Simcha. We didn't need to leave shul for the Germans to be banging us over the head with this. This was something that the Germans, among other idealistic families, raised the banner of. Back when we were in shul, we all heard it. This is not like something we're coming and discovering now. Chacham and Lach HaMaisa. Oh yeah, they always said it. And we've been talking now, among a few of us, of ideas, of steps that we can take to come back into shul. Let's not make the mistake of thinking that, no, we've had this experience now for us forever. Shul is going to be something different. We'll always appreciate it. Rabbi, so I give it 2-3 weeks, and I might be being generous. We'll be back to our good old selves, unless, I mean, we know it's the Matzah Yom Kippur phenomenon. Unless, first of all, we'll have to work. We'll have to put in work to hold on to these very, very valuable sentiments that we've been gaining these days. But in addition to that, you have to take some meiser to lock it in. A meiser to lock it in. And that meiser should be something small. The idea that's being discussed now is something that Reb Tzvi was already clamoring for before the shul shut down, is to create lockers for the cell phones. Lockers for the cell phones. This is, if we talk about the shul being a place where we step into the, in theory, what we would like to be. See, ask every person, are you capable of disconnecting from your cell phone for a little bit of time? I am capable, but it's never really necessary. Sure, I could. In theory, I know I should. You know what? Let's talk and make the shul the place of theory. The truth is that I have bittersweet feelings about going back into shul, because for me, this was a process that I'm still davening will culminate in going back into the Beis HaMikdash itself. Also go to shul. I don't know exactly how it will work then. Okay, we'll see. But if we're going to be granted this chus of going back into our Mikdash Mat, let's go back in right, but in a way that's showing Hashem, we're doing something to guarantee that something is going to last. And let's appreciate it. It's not, first of all, it will enable us to, yes, step in there as the bigger person we want to be, so as to carry back home the bigger person we want to be at home to. But in addition, putting the phone into that locker, and again, this is an idea, we'll talk about for the Olam's input, how exactly it should be done, etc., is a statement of Kvayit Shamayim. It's an end in and of itself, which is true for many of the halachas of davening. Washing your hands before davening is not just so as not to have filthy hands. That Rizal says that going to the bathroom in the morning is equivalent to the avodah of Trumas Hadeshen. You took the burnt ashes from yesterday off the Mizbeach before you stop the avodah. You go to the bathroom to make your body fit for Hashem, it's an act of Kvayit Shamayim. You wash your hands before stepping into the shul, it's an act of Kvayit Shamayim. You turn off your cell phone, you've done an act of Kvayit Shamayim. You stick it into a locker, you've done a greater act of Kvayit Shamayim. And if you can do it for learning time. And then you know what? If you can carry that back home also, and do it at home too. Have a locker at home. In ways, this might be even more important than doing this in shul. In certain ways, I don't want to undermine my agenda right now, but the truth is it's a joint agenda. And here I want to come back and say, Bezos Hashem, we are going to hear now a drasha of our chosin. This is a mishpacha that is Rosh Verisha in the Kaldova Shebekdusha. The various discussions that I had with the Rav Zatzal in the period when I was asked to fill in for him. So he told me all kinds of different things that kind of afterwards I kind of view as like instructions that he was leaving for the next stage. And one of the things he said was, keep Mrs. Gurman in mind, she's a kayach. She's a kayach. And Yaakov, the truth is that I got to know the Gurmans. Now, this is not one of the families that I knew before this new period. And wow, got to know them. It's hard to imagine life before knowing the Gurmans. But Yaakov, I did know beforehand. Yaakov, I knew beforehand. Yaakov, we struck up a relationship. Our relationship started in Masas Mordechai. I was already operating Beis Tfila, but that's not where we connected. We connected in Masas Mordechai. We share a Rebbe. I understand that he might be Masad the Kiddushin at the Chasana. We share a Rebbe, Rav Kirshenbaum from Nachlas Halavim. So we have a lot of common ground. We had a lot of very, very Yishmak Yishmuzin. And I'll tell you about Alexander, it's Min B'minoi. I don't know exactly how this works. Somehow, with Rabbi Alexander Yudin, is it from Rabbi Avigdor Miller's shul? Is it from Flatbush? We knew each other from before Ramat Beit Shemesh. And it was just kind of like we met in Ramat Beit Shemesh, we saw each other's face, and we said, oh, you know, we just took it from there. I don't even remember exactly where it was from, where it was. But still, Rabbi Alexander Yudin's face is a geshmaka face from my past. Is it Flatbush? Is it Rabbi Avigdor Miller's shul? Okay, but this is Mamish Inve Agefen, Inve Agefen. The Simcha here is Meiridik, and we look forward to seeing this very, very special combination of Koyches, the special combination of two families that epitomize Ivdules Hashem B'Simcha, coming together and merging in this beautiful couple, Yaakov, who is such a close Yedidus for quite a number of years already, and the Kalas has a shame that Tzoylech Lefoneho. Bezos Hashem, we'll see this come together to amazing heights of Ivdues Hashem B'Simcha B'Slavus, and this will be the family for us. This will be our family of Kayhanim, even if they're Israelim. This will be our family of Kayhanim that will illustrate for us the theory of what our Ivdues Hashem should look like. Bezos Hashem, it should be B'Mazel Tov and B'Shal Tov U'Mutzlachas. Guten Shabbos, Mazel Tov.
Can everyone hear me? Okay. Okay. Thank you everyone for coming, or kind of coming. I'd really like to start this the same way I started my first chabura in Beis Tfila, and that is by thanking Dr. Callis for arranging this. Actually, really the first encounter ever I had with one of the first encounters I had with Dr. Callis, I don't know if you remember, was I think it was in like fifth grade maybe, and I was friends with Mordechai Callis. I went over for Shabbos, and I was challenged to a cholent race. Now a cholent challenge, it wasn't like who could finish first; it was who could eat the most cholent. And of course, I won. So really, from the first time I had an encounter with Dr. Callis, you know, I really gained a lot. I really gained a ton, really, from Dr. Callis from that first encounter. Okay, so I don't know if anyone saw the title of this year, or whatever, the Chabura. So why is Beis Tfila called Beis Tfila? All right, we know we have an amazing show, Beis Tfila on Avram, BTYA. So, you know, Beis Tfila on Avram is known to, they do a lot of chesed, they have a lot of projects, they have a lot of Torah programming. So, you know, I was thinking, like, why is it called Beis Tfila on Avram? And obviously there could be many answers. I want to give like a little deeper approach to why it's called Beis Tfila on Avram. So really, in order to do that, the first thing we need to do is understand what tefillah is. What is really tefillah? Rav Jacobson is talking about shul. I want to go a little into what tefillah is, and maybe through that we can understand why Beis Tfila is called Beis Tfila. So I want to start with three BBQs. A BBQ, for those who don't know, is a big bombadic question. A big bombadic question. So we're going to start with three BBQs. The first BBQ, first question, like this. You know, this is for all the diktuk, the thousands of diktuk lovers out there. You know, the word oneg, right? Oneg means pleasure. And mitaneg means to get pleasure, right? Osher, wealth, right? And mitasher is to get wealthy. Or let's say mitchaten is to get married, right? So mitpalel is to get tefillah. Well, what does that mean, right? I thought Hashem's getting my tefillah. I'm not getting my tefillah. I get wealthy. That could be mitchaten is I get married. But mitpalel, I get prayer. I don't get the prayer. Hashem gets the prayer. So what is mitpalel? What does that mean? What does that word mean? That's the first BBQ. Second BBQ, second question is like this. Right, we know that Hashem could, we say, or a lot of people say, in Ani Mamin, I say, Ani Mamin, Unar Shleim, Hashem, Boris, Baruch Shemoy, Yodea, Kol Masinin, Masay, Vani Adam, Chom Akshav Oysam. Hashem, right, knows what we do, and Hashem can read our thoughts. Very cool. Okay, so if Hashem can read my thought, and he knows that I want to win the raffle to the new car, yeah? There's a new car, the raffling off, and I want to win. Hashem knows that. So why do I need to ask him for that? Why do I need to pray for that? If he knows what I want, why do I need to actually tell him? That's the second question. Okay, third BBQ, third question. All right, let's say we see someone call up Bibi Netanyahu and he says, you know, Mr. Netanyahu, I just want to tell you, I love the way you speak. You really speak amazing. And also the way you run the country is really just incredible, really just incredible running the country. You're really good, you know, the way you dress, like your hairstyle is really nice. By the way, would it be okay if you gave me a present of like a private helicopter? So I'm just guessing that BB will say like, no. And the guy will say, well, what do you mean? I just praised you. I just, you know, gave you so many praises. I said, you're amazing. So listen, I might not be as smart as BB, but even I would know that this guy who is doing all this praising is just doing it because he wants a helicopter, right? So the question is, you know, when we come to Hashem, we say, Hashem, Nata Gibor, Arakel HaGodol, it's all these things to Hashem, right? Gomel Chasadim Tovim, Hashem is so good. And then we start the long list, this one Esrei, of things that we want from Hashem. It's like, who are we fooling? Hashem, like, we can't fool Hashem. Hashem knows that we want the things we want. So what's the point of all the praising before that? Hashem doesn't need our praises, that's for sure. So what's the point of all the praises? So we have three, these are the three BBQs. All right, what is the word mitpalel, getting tefillah? Number two, Hashem created my mind, why do I need to actually ask it? And number three, what are these praises that we're doing before? So I want to answer with a Jewish answer. For those who know, a Jewish answer is a question. So the question goes like this. What does the word tefillah actually mean? What does the word tefillah actually come from? What is the root? What is the shorish of the word tefillah? So I found two different approaches to what the word tefillah means. And you can learn these two different ways, two things that happen, two actions that we're doing while we're davening. The first one place we find it, it says in Bereishis, Yaakov Avinu is talking to Yosef, and he says, "Ro'ifanecha lo yifilolti." Rashi explains that I never thought I would see you again. Right? So he says, "Ro'ifanecha lo yifilolti." That has the word tefillah in it. Tefillah comes from that word filolti. So this word tefillah, filolti, is thinking. Another place we find the word tefillah or filul is, we find it in Tehillim. It says, Vayefalel Pinchas, that Pinchas was Mefalel. Was Mefalel? So the Mefarshim there explain, very similar idea, that he made a judgment, right? He thought things out, made a judgment. Right? We know the story of Pinchas when he went and killed Zimri, what he did. So that's the second place we find it. Right? We see that this one approach of filul tefillah means thinking, judging. That's the first place we find. Okay. Second idea, we find also in Bereishis, Parashas Vayetze, it says, Vatomer Rachel Naftule Elohim Niftalti. When Naftali is born, Rachel calls him Naftali. And why do you say why Naftali? So one of the explanations Rashi gives, it says chiburim me'ez hamokom nischabarti. The word filul means connection, to connect. So Rav Pinchas says that the word tefillah comes from this word also. Now, like the word naftule elokim niftalti, you hear the word tefillah in there, and that's connection. So we have these two ideas, right? The idea that tefillah is the actual word, the root of the word tefillah is thinking, judging. And you have this other idea, and it's connecting. Okay, so based on this, we can now go back and answer up our first BBQ. Right, we asked the word mitchaten is to get married, mitasher is to get rich. What's mitpala? What are you getting? So, says Rav Hirsch, this is the first thing, that when a person davens, let's say a person says the words Baruch Atah Hashem, right? You, Hashem, are the source of all blessing. What he's doing here is he actually now has to stop and think with himself. He's now bringing thought towards himself, and while doing that, judging himself in a way, you know, do I really believe, do I really feel that Hashem is first of all in front of me, Baruch Atah, right? You, Hashem, is in front of me. And do I feel that Hashem is really the source of all blessing? So that's the first thing he's doing, right? He's thinking with himself. He's bringing tefillah. He's getting thought. He's getting tefillah. He's getting thought and getting a judgment in a way, in a sense. And the second action he's doing is kind of the opposite action. We know that in Chovas HaLevavos, it says, I think I'm familiar with being this a lot. It says in Chovas HaLevavos that Amachshava Nimsheches Achar Dibur, that a person's thoughts can change if he says things a lot. Auto-suggestion, it's called. So when a person says the words Baruch Atah Hashem, a second action he's doing is he's changing the way he thinks. When he says, you know, Hashem, you are the source of our bracha, and he's now changing his thought process to actually start feeling Hashem is standing in front of me, and he is the source of all my past blessing, all my present blessings, my future blessings. So by doing this, he actually is connecting to Hashem. All right, this is the second action, right? The second explanation of the word tefillah, connecting. Okay, so now we already answered our first question, our mispalel. Let's go to the second question, the second BBQ. All right, we said, Hashem knows what I want. So why do I need to tell him that? He can read my mind. So the answer is, because if we say that tefillah is just asking for something, so there's really no point in asking for something that the person, that Hashem knows that I want. But the point of tefillah and the explanation of the word tefillah is not asking. It's thinking with myself. It's me bringing connection to myself with Hashem. And I could only do that by actually asking. When I speak to someone, that's how I could connect with him. I think I heard once from B'Shem, Rav Volbi, that you know, you could have a party, a big family party. And everyone's talking, everyone's schmoozing, and, you know, there's a lot of noise going on. And then in the corner, there's these two people that they're by themselves a little bit. And, you know, they're like talking quietly. Who is that? It's the son of Rishona. You know, the son of Rishona couple. They're the ones who are like, talking quietly with themselves. And, you know, they're quiet, you know, whispering to each other. Why is that? Because whispering, said Volbe, is you know, a way to you get extra connection with the person you're whispering to. So it's revolved by that. When we dive into Shemona Esrei, we whisper because we want to get this extra, you know, sense of connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, and then and obviously this will also answer up our third question, right? We asked, you know, who are we fooling when we tell Hashem all these praises? So the answer is, if really the praises were for us to get what we need, there really would be no point. But again, tefillah, the idea of tefillah is for us. It's for us to get the connection to Hashem, and it's for us to bring that thought to ourselves. So think of a mashal, and I think those who've been to my chaburas might be, my other chaburas in tefillah, might be waiting for this type of mashal. In Camp Landau, I see some people nodding their heads. In Camp Landau, there's a day within the 2 weeks of camp that a lot of the counselors look forward to. And a lot of the counselors look forward to this day. It's Shabbos. No, I'm joking. It's called Feed the Counselor Day. Feed the Counselor Day. What happens to Feed the Counselor Day? So the day before Feed the Counselor Day, a lot of the counselors encourage the kids to the next day bring food for the counselors. So some kids will bring their, you know, baked chocolate chip cookies. Some will bring like iced coffee. Some will bring their their leftover chewing gum, that kind of thing. Each one with his own mahalich. And you know, when the kid gives you his cookies that he baked for you, you know, why is he doing that? He's not doing it to bribe me. That's for sure. He doesn't ask anything after. So why is he doing it? He's doing it because he wants to feel a connection to me, right? He wants to feel that connection to the counselor, right? The same way a chassan will say something nice to his kala, right? He wants to feel that connection. So when we praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we say that Hashem is goma chassadim tovim, right? Hashem does so many kindnesses to us. It's not to bribe him, chas v'shalom. It's for us to get that connection to him, to feel that connection. Let's say if someone sees like a sports star and says, oh, you're awesome, I love you, you're amazing, right? He wants to feel that connection to that sports star. And the second thing he's doing while saying those praises is, like we said, that he starts actually feeling that connection more and more the more he praises. Okay, so to sum it up, basically, right, we asked all these questions, and we're saying that tefillah is not for Hashem, not for us to ask Hashem all our bakashas. It's for us, really for us, to get the connection with Hashem. Change our thought process. Okay. Now, going back to our original question. Why is Beis Tefillah Yon Avraham called Beis Tefillah? And not Beis Gmilat Chasadim or Avde Hashem, I don't know what. What's the Tefillah part? So, if we understand now that Tefillah, I'm just asking, but Tefillah is, as we explained, Tefillah is the thinking, right? It's thinking, it's connecting with Hashem. So I think that's the perfect term for Beis Tefillah. A place where people come to really think and change themselves and, you know, keep growing with themselves. And they're there to connect with Hashem. And whichever way that might be, through davening, through Torah learning, through Gmilat Chasadim. That's why I think Beis Tefillah is called Beis Tefillah. And just to give a couple of examples, you know, I would call myself a Ben Beis Tefillah. You know, I grew up since I was a kid in Beis Tefillah. And I would say I'm Ben Beis Tefillah not only because I dive in there, but also because it really is a big part of me. For example, you know, as a kid walking into, as a bacher, and whenever I would walk into Beis Tefillah in the morning or at night, and you see the Beis Medrash, you know, full of people learning, people who work, make a parnasa for themselves, but they're kovei itim, the Torah, they're serious about their learning, they have a geshmak in their learning. It really has a huge impact. It has a huge impact on me. And that changes my life forever. And you know, another example, let's say, davening a Beis Tefillah. You know, I think it's very rare and it's very special to have a shul that like talking is like totally looked down upon. You know, if someone talks in Beis Tefillah, they're like, you know, like, what are you doing here? You know, on the other hand, you know, it's Tefillah with singing, with geshmak. So there also, you know, it has a huge impact on a person that, you know, this is a place where people are really coming to be mispala, to get that connection with Hashem, change themselves. Of course, you know, Baruch Hashem, I was zoche to sit on in a lot of Rav Linowitz's Asal's drushas. And you know, you felt, you know, after each drusha from Rav Linowitz, you know, you would come out feeling like, or I would come out feeling like I'm a different person now. You know, I view the world differently. It's just different now. All of Linowitz's drushas. And of course, and the same goes with Jacobson. In every single drusha, and you feel like, yeah, I'm a different person. I view the world differently, and I see the world differently now. And of course, you know, I take this opportunity to thank Dr. Kallis and also Rav Jacobson for everything they really do for this shul now, especially now. And just want to really thank all the shul members for everything they've given me. And give a bracha to everyone that they should be able to continue to be true, spalim, true people who are searching for that connection for Hashem, connecting to Hashem, growing and steiging, and they should only see nachas in their families and all Klai Yisrael. Thank you.
Thank you.